Hey there, welcome to Board Game Hot Takes. My name's Tim.
And this is Chris.
And today we're going to be talking about our top five favorite game boards. We'll be jumping into that discussion in just a minute. Adam couldn't join us today, but he did text me his choices as well. So we'll be trying to include him in the show a little bit, but he can't talk back to us when we say anything negative about him. So that's great.
But we are going to speak in his voice and do our best to sound like Adam. Just kidding. We're not really going to do that. I'm just kidding.
I wish we'd been recording. We tried to do that right before we started recording and it was pretty awful, but it would have been great to use as an outtake. Before we jump into this topic, I've got a poll to discuss, and the poll is topical. It's related to this. I asked our listeners, what makes a great game board? I asked this on our Blue Sky account as well as our Facebook group. And here are the poll options that I offered. Art or visuals, and that got 16%. Usability got 63%. Spaces for cards or components got 2%. And other, I'll comment below and can't be mad at Tim for gaps in the poll options, got 19%. So we did get a lot of great comments on this poll as well. So I'll be reading some of those in a minute. But Chris, how would you answer this poll? And maybe that will lead into a little bit about where your choices are coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. And that definitely gets right at how I looked at my list, because one obvious one is the art on it. I mean, I love good art and I love a good production. So needless to say, one of the first things that occurred to me was, well, do I like the way the board looks? But that's not everything. And I tried to make it so that the games on my list tonight weren't just ones that had pretty art on them. And I tried to include those other aspects as well. I tried to include boards that had particularly useful spaces on them and had spaces to put everything or had really nice iconography. And there's a couple where I tried to go outside the box a little bit and do games that had a particularly interesting or unique take on what a game board was, or even that had some element of toy factor to it. So I think the real answer is that all of those things can make for a great game board. But in my heart, probably the first thing that comes to mind is how nice is the artwork on that board and how pretty does it look? What about you?
Oh, yeah, we're somehow exactly aligned tonight, Chris, because I use these three options because they're all things I look for that when I see a game board that I think is great, they usually have all three. But I really do think my most important is art or visuals. Even sometimes at the cost of usability, I'd rather sit and play on a board that feels thematic, that looks awesome on the table, even if I, you know, have to look a little bit for the icons. But I think you'll find that most in my list use some element of all three of these, but I'll talk to why that is. Here's what some of our listeners answered. So Tim Bedreau said, the perfect board for me is modular. Think Eclipse or Mage Knight, that builds as you play and is different each game. It keeps the game from getting stale. Now, this is an interesting topic, and I actually do have a semi-modular board on my list tonight, but I really don't like the table presence of a modular board. I don't like when there isn't that kind of central shape out on the middle of the table, and they're like just random elements kind of put together, and they can get bumped, and there's space in between them. So for me, that really kind of ruins the table presence, even though I think some games really take advantage of.
Yeah, for real, dude. That is one of my pet peeves, is I really dislike modular boards, and not for any really good reason. I mean, I guess the things you said, I agree with, and those are probably perfectly fine reasons, but I also understand why people use modular boards, that they create variety. And a perfect example, I don't know if this is one that's on your list or not, but I think of Scythe, and the modular board there makes a whole lot of sense, but I really don't like modular boards. I don't prefer them. And I think part of it is the same thing you said. They get bumped. You got to put them together. Ugh. Yeah, just not my preference.
Well, the Scythe one is a great example because they did it exactly how I would want a modular board, which is that you still have a big rectangular board on the table. Mm-hmm. All the other elements that you need there, the score trackers are, and everything around there. And then the modules are built, are like, you know, set on top of the board. So you still have that table presence. So that one I don't mind at all. But yeah, if it's like Eclipse is a great example of a game that is so cool, but you just have these like hexes kind of free floating out in the middle of the table space, it just kind of takes away from the board game experience a little bit for me.
Yeah, more Expeditions and a perfect example. Same.
Yeah, another good. Yeah, exactly. So Rick Burkowski said, I like boards that highlight the sequence of the round. Then you won't forget a step and everyone will know what's coming. And he referenced Quaxa Quedlinburg as an example. And although I don't like the artwork on that board game, so I wouldn't have picked it, I think that's a great board. Not only does it have the nice round tracker and it kind of tells you when some things change at certain rounds, but that end round, you know, the steps you go through after pulling the stuff out of the bag, I use that as a reference every single round of every game I play of it. I love when game boards really give you all the information you need to play the game.
Yeah, that is nice. A really good example of that is Robotech Reconstruction, which we played and reviewed a long time ago. But one of the things that I remember most about that game was just how usable the round tracker was in that. And it wasn't just the round tracker, like which round are you in? It was all those steps. And there was quite a few steps in that game, so it was very useful.
Jonathan Goheen said, I chose usability, but it was tough because while a board needs to enable the mechanisms, it's also often the focal point for the world you're entering into. Ideally, you wouldn't have to sacrifice one for the other. So Jonathan kind of aligns with us here that, you know, the art, the theme, it's really important, but usability is also important. Okay, so Scott Holy, who's a local friend of mine, but he'd like many people, when I woke up this morning, many people misread the poll question where I said, what makes a great game board? And they thought I said, what makes a great board game? So I had a list of comments explaining what a great board game was, and I had to correct them. But Scott's answer was, it's designed by Stefan Feld, obviously. Well, he's a huge Stefan Feld fan. So when I responded to him, I said, game board, not board game. He said, okay, well, then it has to be shaped like Stefan Feld.
Nicely done.
All right. And then Luke Wortley said, well, in most things in life, I'm fashion over function. When it comes to board games, it's 100% about being able to easily locate things and read the board state if it's a shared board or a player board. I love Botoku, but wow, that thing is tough to get used to. On the other hand, played some solo Holler Toe tonight, so this was an apropos question. And he posted a picture of the Holler Toe board, which I think is interesting because it is a very, like, it looks kind of like a big spreadsheet in a way. I mean, it's got artwork and stuff on it, but it always does. It never looked thematic in any way to me, which is probably one of the reasons why I haven't really been going after that game, but it probably works great from a functionality perspective. And he mentioned Botoku, which is one of the most beautiful boards I've ever seen. It was in consideration for me on tonight's list. But I get it though. Like from a usability perspective, it's got so much going on that it's a little bit hard to actually interact with the game. So there is a trade-off for sure, but he falls a little bit more on the function over form, you know, side of the equation.
Man, I gotta say, going that far on function, I mean, I get it. I understand that we gotta have function in there too, but board games are about entering a different world. You gotta have something that draws you in. So I couldn't forego attractiveness that much. So I'm sticking with form.
Yeah. All right. So over on our Blue Sky account, people kind of responded in a different way. Almost every one of the responses on Blue Sky were people that actually shared a picture of their favorite game board. And this was really fun. So it's just so fun to see some of these game boards laid out and kind of compare them side by side. So I would go check out our Blue Sky account and take a look at that thread, the poll question there. But I'll just mention a couple. So Jake shared Chaos in the Old World and Stone Age, both great examples. They were both games that I considered a little bit for tonight's topic. Untitled shared High Frontier and Dungeon Degenerates, both very striking and interesting boards to look at. Chris, you should check out the Dungeon Degenerates board if you haven't seen it. It is quite an interesting production. The whole game is, but that board is quite colorful. Pinithy J shared Constantinopolis, which is a game that I had not heard of before, but it looks like an older, probably early 2000s, 2010 Euro style game. So it's not a pretty board and I don't know how it plays, but you can see that there's a lot of really useful elements on the board. Mm-hmm. And so that's cool. And then Leanne shared the Abyss board, which is a really pretty board, really functional as the way that everything's laid out. And she also mentioned a few things that really highlight game boards for her. Gold star number one, she said, was if the board has any slots to track or count something, enough space to easily put the tracking counters. I get that. You know, sometimes you've got like tracks and you got to stack up several people's tokens and they fall off. So that's a good call out. Gold star number two for her was the board artwork matches the theme. I love looking at a board like it's a painting, but only if it's still functional as a board. So I think, you know, falls in line with what we're saying is that you want it to be thematic. You want it to draw you into the world. Gold star number three, a normal shape board where I can reach things. I hate standing up to reach things. fair enough. There are some boards that are very large and it's very hard to see what's around the table and you got to like lean over other people to get to them. So I get that. And then best in class star, when the board includes spaces dedicated for relevant resources or tokens for the game. I really like that too. And you'll see me mention that a few times tonight. And several game boards that I thought about for the show include those as well. I like when the game board just kind of lets you put all the components on there. All the cards have their little spaces, all the piece. That's super fun. All right. Well, that will wrap up the poll. So let's jump into this topic. Now, I set a couple preconditions on this when I asked Chris and Adam to make their lists. And one thing I asked was, let's focus on the central game boards and not player boards, because we'll probably do a future episode on player boards. So we'll be looking at the central game boards. And the second one I asked us to focus on was to try to kind of step outside of the box and not just talk about games that we talk about all the time. So this was really actually tricky for me once I actually started to do this, because I would go through I literally looked through about 2,000 game boards to do this episode. I spent almost all of Saturday night doing this. And as I was looking through like the BGG top 2,000, every time I'd hit one of my favorite games, the game board just stood out. And I was like, man, I hate to not include that on here. So I don't know if you guys had the same trouble, but for me, it was really tricky. But I think also was fun to explore some games that I haven't played much or maybe only once, or some that I haven't even played at all, where I think the board is a great component and a great piece of the package.
Well, I absolutely had an incredibly hard time. Probably because I am so production focused. A lot of the games that I like the most tend to be ones that have a really good production and generally a really nice board. So I had a hard time doing that. It's not really a spoiler alert, but in total, counting runners up, a game I don't like, and the five picks that we have, I've got like seven or eight games, I think, in the end. And two of them are games that I would say I talk about a fair amount. Not a ton, but two of them are games that I've mentioned, multiple times on the show, that have come up a bunch of times on the show, but were ones that I just thought the board was so good that I couldn't leave them off. But I really did try to focus on ones that we don't talk about a whole bunch or hadn't talked about at all. And so starting out, I actually wanted to do something a little bit different. And I mentioned this before, but I wanted to take two games, and this is my one cheat. I put two games for number five, and they're both games that do not have a traditional board in the sense that we normally think of a game board, but they are unique and beautiful in their own way, and I found really appealing, and I wanted to give a shout out for people thinking outside the box a little bit and doing something a little bit different. One of them is Nunami, designed by Tomasi Monyok, and that's a self-published game. And this game has a very unique board in the sense that it's a series of hexes, and these are kind of 3D printed plastic hexes where each of the little pieces of the hex is in the shape of a triangle. So it's basically six triangles put into a hex. And each hex holds a card. And the cards in this game are also triangle shaped. And this is a very abstract game, but what it's standing in for is that's supposed to be terrain. This is Tomasi Monyok is an Inuit designer who I've talked about, I think, a couple times way back in the early days of the show. And the idea of this game is these are areas of the land, and you're trying to have the most presence in a particular part of the land, but if the people and nature get out of balance, then everything falls apart and you kind of have to start over again. And just seeing the way that these pieces fit, slot these cards in, I absolutely love. And the art on the cards is kind of adorable. And one of the things that I find neat about this is that you can set these little hexes up in any way you like. They're neutral. There's none that are different. They may be different colors, but that doesn't signify anything different. So you can kind of make the board any shape that you want in Nunami. The other one that I wanted to mention is a game that I actually heard about from you, Tim, and it's Ross, A Dance of Love, which you had mentioned when you were on the BGG podcast a couple of months ago, and you had talked about this one. It was a brand new game. I don't think it's even out yet, is it?
I don't think so either. Candace, the host of that show, had mentioned that she had a chance to play it, or maybe a prototype of it. I don't remember. But yeah, that we did talk about on the show.
Yeah. And so this is another one, similar concept to Nunami, where it's a very abstract board. But this game is themed around a Indian dance style called Garba Ras, which I was not familiar with, but I am familiar with a little bit of Indian dance, and I appreciate, you know, the beautiful costumes and very, very colorful. But this is a game where you have dice placement. The dice are your dancers, and the board itself, and I'm saying board with air quotes because this game doesn't have a board in the traditional sense. It's these, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 circles that are built around a central circle, and as they move, they rotate, and those represent the dancers. And I don't know that much about the game mechanics, but it's this sort of gear type of mechanism on the board, and it's absolutely beautiful. This is a game that I'm dying to try just because the board is so pretty. And so there's nothing indicative of any particular theme on this one. It's very abstract, but at the same time, it is absolutely gorgeous. And I really appreciate that the designer went outside the box and did something a little bit different, but also attached a really interesting theme to it, even if that theme is not strongly represented by the visuals of the game. And I neglected at the beginning to mention that the designer is Mihir Shah and published by Arcane Wonders.
Chris kicking it off right off the bat with a modular board.
Yeah, I know that's a bit of a cheat. And I also cheated by having two games in my number five slot.
No, but, you're good. You know. You're good. No, and it's cool to call out. I mean, when the game board can be that unique, I think it's pretty fascinating. There was a lot, right? After looking through 2,000 games, I can tell you there were some game boards that might not be a perfect match for my ideal game board, but they were pretty awesome. They're pretty unique, and these ones definitely qualify. All right, well, my first list shouldn't surprise you. It's a midweight Euro because that is the style of game that I love. But this one I think is really exceptional. It's a game I haven't talked about too much. I think just once on the table because I've only played it once, and this is Barcelona. Barcelona is published by Board and Dice, and the designer is Danny Garcia. Barcelona is really interesting. It's about kind of building up and you know, planning the city of Barcelona. And what I like about this game board and why I had to call it out is not only does it look visually striking, it does some of the things I really like in a game board. One, it kind of fits many elements of the gameplay onto this one board. The main section of the board, kind of the main part of it, is a bunch of city blocks of Barcelona and the way that it was planned out with the main kind of avenue going right diagonally down the middle and then these other cross streets. So you're basically building Barcelona on this main board, but not only does it represent the main board, but it's also on the top across each of these different blocks, as well as down one side, are the actions you're going to take. So the way you're going to take actions here is you're going to put citizens out into one of these intersecting areas and then take the two actions that it intersects with. So you're interacting with the board, but some of the actions you're taking are actually going to build plots onto the land here. You're going to build streets. So you're building up the board as you're playing the game, and it just looks beautiful from the start, but it just gets more and more beautiful as you play through it. You're not only getting the action selection there, but you're actually kind of building up the city, and that's the action you're taking. So I thought it did a great job there. It also has a few, of course, it has a score tracker around the edge, like every good Euro should, but it's got another track that you can move up here to kind of fight for first player token and some other benefits. And that's on this board. And then there's some other, you know, kind of like the elements that push the end game and get you different bonuses as you place these citizens out onto the board. That's represented down at the bottom. So I think with one kind of standard rectangle board, they did a great job of putting many of the elements here. Now, this one does have a sideboard as well that also has kind of a little separate mini game and a market of tiles in there. I didn't use games with sideboards, I think, is interesting because I would prefer if the whole game existed on one board. But I also think there's a benefit to having sideboards sometimes because you don't have to have a massive board. It makes it a little bit easier to fit on your table. So in this case, I gave it a little bit of a pass for having that sideboard, and I think that works well too. But I think the central board here is great. It's a great example of form and function and really making the game about what's happening there in the center of the board.
But I got to ask you, Tim, We were talking before about modular boards. I know this is not a modular board exactly, but it does have those spots where you're putting out these little spaces that have the worker placement on them as you're building up the city. Does it ever get annoying having those tiles out on the board? Do they get knocked around, or was that not really a problem with this game?
I don't remember that being a problem at all. They're all just small cardboard kind of chits, but then you're also putting like little streetcars out on the board and stuff as well. But I don't remember it being a problem at all. You are picking up and putting down these little citizens, but it didn't happen in my three-player game of it. Everyone must have been pretty steady that day.
Okay. Nice. Not enough drinks in them to start causing trouble yet, so that's a good
thing. Yeah, I guess not. All right, well, so Adam's not here, as I mentioned, but we're going to give you his thought. So now he just texted these to me really quickly with some really quick thoughts. So I'm going to list the game, say exactly what he said in the text, and then I'm going to expound on it just a little bit for him.
And then we're going to guess what the heck he was thinking.
Yeah, that's right. So his number five was Pax Pamir Second Edition. Now, Adam, of course, because he had to do this kind of on the fly. He's, by the way, the reason Adam can't be here is because he's a pilot and he's flying tonight. And I think he was literally in his car getting to the airport or something when he was sending me the details. But he said Pax Pamir Second Edition, simple and beautiful is all he said. And I actually considered Pax Pamir because the main game board is a cloth. It's like literally made out of cloth, and it's kind of an abstract map with a little score tracker around the edge of it. This is such a beautiful game board. Now, it doesn't do a lot of the other things I like, which, you know, you've got a separate card market that's just laid out on the table. You know, it doesn't really have a lot of elements to it, but it is very standout as far as the way that it's produced and how it adds to the table presence.
Now, because Adam's not here, I'm going to disagree with him. Because he can't fight back. Not that this is not an attractive game board. I think the reason I wouldn't pick this one is just because it's a little too simple to make this list, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, we didn't get to hear what Adam thought about what made a great game board. So we'll see how that cements her. Now, the other thing, of course, is that this is a game that he mentions all the time. Yeah. So he didn't really stick to the rules here, although he does have a couple coming up on the list here that will not break that rule.
All right. Well, at number four is one of my two quasi-cheat games. This is a game that has gotten mentioned, a fair number of times on this show, but this is one I could not possibly skip by, and that is Pan Am, designed by Prospero Hall and published by Funko Games. Pan Am is almost unbelievably beautiful in its board. I absolutely love everything that Prospero Hall did in this package. And one of the things that I think is my favorite about it, well, first of all, there's a million things. One of them is the fact that they use art that's very reminiscent of the aircraft maps and promotional materials of the time. So this game starts in about the 1920s, 1930s when Pan Am started, and it goes up and through the end of the Pan Am era. And so it has this very traditional artwork. I mean, Pan Am is one of those company names that just sort of brings back these waves of nostalgia for Americans. And the art absolutely captures that. And on the board in particular, this map, it's this odd projection of the map with, from what I've read, this is actually from a Pan Am map of the time. And it's this really odd looking map. I can't even explain it. You just have to kind of look at a picture, but it shows the world from this perspective that it's almost difficult in some ways to tell where you are on the map unless you're very familiar with this map. I mean, we have the very standard version that we see, that we think of when we think of a world map. And this one just looks very different. So the art is absolutely wonderful. It's unique in the way that it displays the map, even though it is technically a standard world map. It's presented in kind of an interesting way. And the other thing that it does is it creates all of that functionality right there on the board. I don't think there's much of anything other than your player board that doesn't go right on the main board. It's got the worker placement spaces where you auction the different actions that you can take. It lays everything out in this really nice circular pattern around the board. So you have action number one, action number two, action number three. So whether you're bidding on a new aircraft or bidding on a city connection, it's all laid out there on the board for you. And it's so elegant. I just, it's a great, great board, and I couldn't leave this one off because I am always so pleased when I get this game out of the box and look at this board. Just gives me a thrill.
This is an awesome selection. And a couple of things that Chris didn't mention that's part of the actual playability of it is that there's this event that's really important that happens every turn of the game. It sets the stock prices and also may change some other thing in the game. And the stack of cards for that is right in the center of the board. So you flip it over and that's visible to everybody. Mm-hmm. But there's everything you need is printed on here. There's like a little tracker at the bottom left that shows the current stock price. There's the cost for the different types of airplanes you can buy or printed on there. The cost for the airports you can buy or printed. The little market of cards, of location cards you can pick up. This is an awesome choice, Chris. This is a near perfect example of a game board, both form and function. All right, well, my number four game is Godspeed. Godspeed is a game we reviewed several years back. Chris had backed it on Kickstarter back in the day because he thought the theme sounded really cool. So we played this as one of our very early review games. And we've even had a chance to play it a couple times since then. And this was in my mind and part of the inspiration for this episode, to be honest, because ever since I first played that game, I said, if we ever do an episode on best game boards, this has got to make my list. So it's always stuck with me. And my friend Tony, a local friend, he recently picked this up at a sale and he's like, hey, Tim, you interested in playing this game Godspeed? I was like, heck yeah, I'll bring it over. I'll teach it to you. So I just relearned the game and I was thinking about it. And that's why we're doing this episode. Godspeed is an interesting board because it is mostly what I love about it is just the artwork. It's you're on this alien planet and it's just this cool, like kind of pastel, like alien planet that you're looking at with different caverns and caves and mountains and hills. And I just love that. But then printed on the board is everything you need to play the game. There's some tracks in the bottom left. There's spaces for most of the cards that you need. The game kind of consists of every round is a few little mini games like bidding for first player token and you know, working together to perform a mission. But each of the elements that you need to proceed through these mini games is kind of printed on the board. And you're just looking at that central space and interacting with it. I love this game board. I think it's so beautiful and I think it's, you know, super functional as well. But I think even if it wasn't functional, I think I just love the way the artwork works on this thing. So this is a favorite game board for me.
That's a great choice, Tim. Interestingly, this one made my short list. Well, it didn't make my short list, didn't make it onto the actual list, but it came so close to making it on. It was almost a runner up. I agree with you. There's something about this pastel kind of simple, not, I don't want to say cartoonish, but it's very simple artwork that is so appealing. I think that's a great choice.
And I didn't mention the designers of this game are Clayton Hargrave and Adam Hill. And the publisher is Pandasaurus Games. It says Devere now too. That must be the European publisher. But I'm going to mention the artist is Jesse Riggle just because I do love the art style in this game. I think even though there's not a lot of like unique art on cards, I think the board art and some of the component icon art is just, it's a really wonderful mix. All right. So we're going to go back to Adam's number four here. And Adam, of course, picked a game that he talks about all the time again. Don't worry, we'll get to the original one soon. Number four for him was Smartphone Inc. And he just said functionality. Now, Smartphone Inc. is a great call out here because it is such a standout board, not only with how clean and like smooth it is, but it's one of the only boards that is the entire game board is dual layer. And so everywhere that you're interacting with on the board, you can literally slot your little cubes out in these different markets out in the, you know, out on this map of the world. It's got a great little technology, you know, kind of set down at the bottom so that you can see how many tokens have been put out there and everything. This is a really cool choice for best game board.
I've got to agree with that one. I may have disagreed with Pax Premier, but I'm not going to disagree with Smartphone Inc. It's probably a little sad for me to say this. It makes my heart beat just a little faster thinking about the two-layer main board that is so unique and so awesome. I wish every board game did this.
Yeah, that'd be great. And we could just pay about $20 more per every game that we purchase. It'd be makes sense. Makes perfect sense.
It would be worth it until we run out of money. So my number three pick, unfortunately, does not have two-layer main board, but it is a board that is covered with absolutely beautiful art. And it is the Great Wall, designed by Kamil Siesla, Robert Pleskovich, and Lukas Vlordashik, and published by Awaken Realms. Awaken Realms never disappoints with its production. I have had plenty of scenarios where I've been a little disappointed in the gameplay and the rule sets, but their production is always top-notch, and the Great Wall is no exception to that at all. One of the things that I like about it is that this game board is epic. I know that that's actually a complaint some people have. One of the listeners had said they didn't like the game. They had to stand up and lean over the board to actually get at things. I hate to say it, but I love that. I love it when a board is big and has an impressive table presence. Unfortunately, it also means you probably need a bigger table as well. But this game board is huge. And one of the fun things that I like about it a lot is that it's separated into these two very different areas, one of which is on the player's side of the Great Wall. And on the player's side, that's where all of your worker placement spaces are. And the art there is absolutely beautiful. It's this kind of slightly washed out pastel-ish watercolor Chinese style art, which is absolutely incredible. It makes it just a pure pleasure looking at this game board. It has clear iconography. And for a game that does not have a super clear rule set, I think that was one of the complaints we had when we played this game. The iconography is actually quite nice. And similarly, it has a really nice set of spots for all of the things that you need to have. And this is a game that has so many different stacks of cards. So having a place to put all of them where it's logical to where they might be used in the course of the game is a real plus for this production. The other side of the game board is the far side of the wall. It's the side from which the invaders are coming. So that side is where you keep all of the invader cards that you're putting your attackers out, your warriors out onto this card to repel the invaders. And that side has a very different function from the other side. On one side, you're putting all of your workers and taking all of your actions. On the far side, that's where you're engaging in combat and putting out your fighters. And these two complement each other so nicely. And the art is equally beautiful on both sides. And it's all on this huge canvas, metaphorical canvas, not real canvas, of this giant game board. And I wish that I enjoyed playing this game as much as I enjoyed looking at it.
Yeah, this is an interesting choice, Chris. It's a very striking production, the game is. And it, one of the things that you mentioned is how sometimes there's a toy factor in games, in game boards. And this one has that great wall that you actually build up. So you're building different levels of it. So it just adds to the physicality of experiencing this game. Agreed, though. You know, didn't love the game, but definitely a striking game board here. Well, my number three is Viscounts of the West Kingdom. This was designed by Sam MacDonald and Shem Phillips and published by Garfield Games. And it's interesting because we just talked about Architects of the West Kingdom on last week's episode. And I actually like all of the game boards that the Miko has designed for this series. They're unique. They're different. Viscounts stands out in that it is actually... The game is kind of a rondel game where your characters are moving around this circular map and, you know, kind of interacting with different spaces around the map. But they did a pretty good job of this. It's a bunch of triangle wedges that you can kind of reorganize in any order. You can flip certain ones over to account for player count, basically. And then it makes this kind of pie shape. And right in the middle of the game board is this 3D printed, you know, kind of this plastic castle that has three different levels on it. And it's got little cardboard inserts in there that show different iconography on it. So the game board has that toy factor. It's very usable. It makes it very easy to both interact with it so that you can move characters around in this little castle as you're moving them up, but also know, you know, where they're supposed to fit and stuff like that. And then it's got really cool artwork printed where you're basically, you know, your Viscount character is this little meeple that's a knight riding a horse. And he's, you know, moving around this track around the outside of this board, and there's two tracks, but it's all represented by little towns and rivers and forests that you're walking through and stuff like that. So you're kind of seeing this town around the castle, or this whole region around the castle, and interacting with it. All the iconography printed on the board is super clear. There are these spaces that you can build your buildings out there and you get bonuses. So it's really clear to see what that is. And then on each of these wedges is a stack of cards, which are basically the cards you can purchase for your deck. And each one, you know, depending on where you are, it's going to have a different cost, etc. So almost everything you need to interact with in this game is in this really unique board with this little 3D castle in the middle of it. My only minor complaint is that there are a couple other cards and resources that if this had been a square board, with the tiles that stacked on it, then you would have had spaces for those things around. So as is, you kind of have to have little piles of resources and cards around the board, which I don't love. But I think the board stands out enough, and it's very usable. It's very easy to interact with for quite a unique game. So Viscounts of the West Kingdom. While we're talking about this publisher, though, in this series, Paladins of the West Kingdom, I had a hard time making the choice between the two, because Paladins of the West Kingdom is really interesting in that it is some very thin strips of cardboard that are laid out with a whole bunch of like card markets above and below these boards. So if you look at that one too, it's really stand out because it kind of just like this long thin strip of cardboard makes the game board and all the components kind of set right around it in a just perfect, organized and clean way. And I love that one as well.
Well, I got to say, looking at Paladins compared to Viscounts, you made the right choice. I'm not super impressed by the board in Paladins.
That's funny.
But it's funny, last week when we were talking about Architects, one of the comments that we made, somebody made, I forget who, maybe it was you, about how there's enough similarity in these games that you can sort of start getting things a little bit mixed up, and it's hard to remember which game you played and which one did a certain thing. One thing that I definitely remember about Viscounts was that central castle. And looking at the picture again now, I'm like, oh man, this is a game that I would have been like lusting after in the Sears catalog back in like 1982, you know, like Hungry Hungry Hippos or something like that. It just has that look to it, which is incredibly nostalgic for me. And I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And even like the Architects board, which is just a kind of a standard rectangle board and it's just worker placement spots on it. I love how they added the artwork in there where every space mm-hmm. that you go to has artwork and you see little, you know, sit kind of townsfolk walking around and interacting in the city that you're going to. So I've got another example on my list that will kind of call that back as well. But yeah, this is a great series of unique production for their game boards.
Very nice.
All right. Well, Adam's number three is a game that I absolutely would have put as one of my top ones, except it's a game I've talked about a lot, so I didn't include it, but he did. And that's Scythe. We already mentioned a little bit and when talking about the poll results, his comment was beautiful and Easter eggs. What he means by that is if you ever play Scythe, look really closely at the art in the different regions of the board and you will find some surprise characters that will show up, some surprise things that you might see out on the board. So that's really fun. It's fun that the board is totally functional as is, but you know, it really, you feel it, you feel the regions you're interacting with, you feel the types of production that you can do in that region and stuff like that based on the artwork. But because it's laid out, the graphic design is so clean, there's nice clear hex marks indicating everything. There's nice iconography that indicates what you can do in each region, even though there's a fairly busy artwork behind it. But if you look really close, you can find some fun stuff in there. So this was a great call out. I also like about the Scythe board is that everything else you need to interact with, all the cards are out there in markets on the board. There's a couple tracks, your reputation track, your power track. Those are all represented on the board as well. So I think the Scythe board is a premier example of like top of the line mix of production and functionality with the board. And as I mentioned too, there is the modular board version of it, which does the same thing, has new Easter eggs in it, and also does an amazing job of including all those elements with a modular board.
Very nice. I cannot argue with that choice. That was one of the first games that I ever fell in love with for the production. So good choice, Adam. All right, well, my number two, we're getting toward the top of the list here, and so we're talking about the best of the best. And this is a game that we talked about quite a while ago and has come up almost never again because it got a resounding three thumbs down in our review. It was not a game that we enjoyed, but I think everybody really appreciated the artwork. And that is Merchants of the Dark Road, designed by Brian Suray. And I want to call out here some of the art that I recognize. The artists were Andrew Bosley, Joey Julian, and Matt Paquette. And they took this game and made it into a moody masterpiece. The game board in Merchants of the Dark Road is probably one of my favorites of all time because it creates such a, like I said, a mood that reminds me a little bit of... Oh, what's the one I'm thinking of?
Brass Birmingham.
Brass Birmingham. Mm-hmm. See, you knew exactly what I was thinking of.
Yep,
yeah, totally. It has that moody feel to it, but this one even more so because it's got a little bit of a fantasy element to it. But on the left side of the board, you have these windy streets in this, you know, medieval fantasy town. I don't know if medieval, whatever it is, it's a fantasy town, and it's like the lamplit streets. And you know that every corner, you know, you're going to have a dark alleyway full of miscreants and ne'er-do-wells and dangerous situations. And the game, even though it's got this incredibly simple rondel mechanism, you're just moving around the rondel, you're doing it on these city streets that make you feel like you're creeping through the night and walking from dark alley to dark alley. Absolutely amazing. On the right side of the board, you have kind of the outside world. It's the place where when you're ready to go adventuring and you're ready to go do some really dangerous stuff, you venture outside the gates of this city that's on the left side of the board and out into the wilds. And there it's this, again, very kind of moody, creepy, dark forest and, you know, snowy landscape that really puts you in mind of the kind of locations that are you're in this game. It really makes you feel like you're there, and it completely immersed me in the feel of the game. Even if some of the rules and the gameplay elements took me back out of it, I kept feeling myself getting yanked back in by the amazing art on this board. So another one where I didn't love the game, but the artwork made it a real joy to look at.
Yeah, this is a great pick for great game board, because the artwork is awesome. Also, it's very functional. I mean, the game mechanisms is what really turned us off, but it's basically a rondel game as well. And it's pretty neat that the rondel is this path through the snow where you're going to be traveling with your carriage and horse and move into these different areas, these different shops and stuff like that. And then there's another side of the board that's kind of like traveling out into the wilderness. So really evocative, does a great job of bringing theme into the mechanism of the main mechanism of the board game.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my number two is a more recent game. I've only spoke about it once on the show, and that is Evacuation. Evacuation was designed by Vladimir Succi and published by his company Delicious Games. And you cannot not see that. If you see this game on the table, you're going to stop and want to know what it's all about. I've been a Vladimir Succi fan for a while, but when I first saw this board in a picture, I didn't even know it was designed by him. And I was like, I've got to play this game. What it is that, you know, the theme of Evacuation is that Earth is dying and you've got to basically travel and move your entire community and all your buildings and everything over to another planet to live on. So what you've got on this rectangular game board is a dying planet Earth on one side, where you've got some oceans in there, but a lot of it is just, you know, sand. It's just like desert. Everything is drying up. It's too hot to live. And we've got a couple in each of the four quadrants of this map on the planet Earth are some of the player color related buildings that exist there today. And then on the other side of this game board is another planet, a vibrant, lush planet with some Arctic region and some forest region and some, you know, some kind of desert region, but it looks like a sustainable, habitable planet. And going between these two is this kind of track of how you're going to travel from one planet to the other. It almost looks like an S that starts on one side of the planet, kind of swerves in between the two, and then comes to the other side. And I think that's what really makes this map so striking, is just that you can tell that there's a route between these two planets. But beyond that, everything that you really need to remind yourself how to play this game is in here too. You know, the player order marker, there's a kind of a, every round there's different penalties or different things you have to pay depending on and which planet you have to pay them from. So there's a nice little chart on the board that represents that. Every round is variable for what some of the bonuses are from succeeding in those things. So there's a little card that represents that. And there's several other, you know, spots of iconography or messaging that kind of explains to you how you're interacting with this map, which is awesome. And then this game board does some things that I like better than just having stacks of cards off to the side of the board. But there's several markets in this game, and there's some clear icons printed on the edge of the map that shows you where those markets are laid out, so that you're always going to have a nice clean setup. You know, the buildings are down in the right hand corner, there's three spots for it, and it tells you at the end of the round which one do you wipe out and move them over. Same thing with the ships you can buy, same things with the entertainment stadiums you can buy. So I just love how this board looks. I love interacting with it. I love the feeling of basically destroying your buildings on Earth and moving them across to this other planet and starting to see this other planet grow up and bloom. Evacuation is quite a striking game board that works really well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. This is an eye catcher. It looks like somebody slapped together two terraforming Mars boards and put an S around them in the best way. It actually looks really, really cool. And it sounds like a fun game, too. This is one that I'd like to try. And certainly that board looks like it's going to be really fun to look at as you're playing.
Yeah. All right. Well, Adam's number two was Trekking the World. And he said all of the rules on the board. So I think this is a great example. If you take a look at it, one, it's a unique shaped board. It is basically just a map of Earth, but it has kind of like an atlas. You know, if you look at an atlas, it kind of shows the curves of the planet on the outside edges. And this board is cut to look like that. So it's not a complete rectangle board, but it's rectangular with some nice round edges on the side. But what he's saying is that essentially, aside from just being very clear, you know, there's different routes and spots you can stop in each of these continents. The continents are very colorful. It's very easy to differentiate them. But up in the top right-hand corner, there's some special actions you can take, and they vary every game. So those cards that represent the special actions are you know, just laid up there for everyone to see. But then the options you can take on your turn are printed right on the board. I mean, it's a fairly simple game, but once you've taught somebody, they never have to reference the rule book. You never have to ask because everything you need to know is printed right on the board. And I think that's wonderful. This is a great example of just making a game easy to play and, you know, letting people get into it without having to refresh the rules every time they bring it out.
Very nice choice. So that gets us to number one, right? I mean, this is the top. This is the very top of the list. And I tried so hard not to put this game on here. About 10 times I went and said, oh, I'm going to put something else there because I've talked about this game too much. And ultimately, I just couldn't not do it because the game board is so perfect, so absolutely wonderful that I had to put this as number one. And it is, drum roll please, Sulcan, the Mayan calendar.
I knew you were going to pick this one. I just knew it had to be on your list.
Yeah. Designed by Simone Luciani and Daniela Ticini and published by Czech Games Edition. I mean, there really was no option. I couldn't not put this game on here. It has a beautiful board that's got a space for everything. It's got vibrant artwork. The Mayan style artwork is gorgeous. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. And again, colorful, like you wouldn't believe if you haven't played this game before. It's so vibrant and so interesting to look at. But at the same time, for very vibrant, intricate artwork, it doesn't leave you feeling confused. The iconography is good on this. It's another game that has a spot for everything. But really the star of the show in Sulcan the Mayan Calendar are the gears that are built into the board. And funny that I'm saying this because this is the second game that I've mentioned tonight that uses gears. And this one is where you place your workers. So you're actually putting your workers onto these gears that are built into the board. And as the gears turn, the workers move. And that's going to determine how you end up taking an action during your turn. You place a worker, the next round, they move to a new space. And then when you pull that worker off, wherever that worker happens to be, that is the action that you take with that worker. So it's all about getting the timing right. But what makes all of that work is those gears. The way they turn and they're built into the board, so there's no flopping around, you know, things aren't falling apart or, you know, coming off of the board. And they have nice little slots where you put your workers in, your workers, these little cylinders. And it is so elegant. And it's one of these things where you look at it at first, I think all of us kind of expected that maybe it was going to feel a little bit gimmicky, but it works so nicely with the gameplay that I it's such a joy to play this game and to turn those gears. I never let anybody turn the gears on my game board. I'm the only one who turns those gears in such a great game. So number one, Sulcan, the Mayan calendar.
Yeah, this really is a great pick, not only for those gears, but I love that, you know, the markets that you need to deal with are right there on the board. There's several tracks you're interacting with. They're clearly printed on the board. Everyone's interacting with them. But there's also that great artwork right around the gears that represent the different regions, the different activities you're doing. This is a great pick, Chris. Great pick. All right, well, my number one, top of the list, is a game I've never played before. It's a game I want to play, but I haven't played it. And this is Tricarion Legends of Illusion. This was designed by Richard Amon and Victor Peter and published by Mind Clash Games. Before I get into the game board here, I have to tell you that there were two other Mind Clash games that were very much on my short list. And if I had a list of 10, all three of them probably would have made it. Both Cerebria and Anachrony both have some of the most beautiful game boards and most functional game boards I've ever seen, especially for fairly complex games. And I think Tricarion's the same. Now, as I mentioned, I've never played the game. I roughly understand that it's a fairly heavy worker placement game. The idea being that you're basically magicians, I don't know, in like late 19th century, trying to put on the most prestigious shows. Think of something like The Prestige or there was an Edward Norton movie that came out about the same time that was also about magicians competing for each other.
The Illusionist.
The Illusionist. There you go. So, you know, it's kind of that theme, and it's in this, the artwork. I mentioned that with Architects of West Kingdom that I love when game boards give you artwork that represents the actions you're taking out there. And Tricarion has this beautifully illustrated 19th century city laid out there that you go to different spaces. I don't know how functional it is because I've never played it. This could be a bunch of terrible iconography, but what I can tell you is it's beautiful to look at. There's obviously a lot of stuff to do on the board, and I suspect by having it laid out in this kind of city view, it makes it more, it makes it easier to recognize what the action is you're trying to take. But beyond that piece of it, up in the top right corner of the board, I would say the top quarter of the board, is this circular overhead view of a theater. Hmm. Because of course the idea is that you're trying to put on a magic show. And so the theater represents, I think, what happens kind of at the end of the round where you're putting on a show. And this kind of, there's a tracker in there. Maybe it's a score tracker or something else, but it's like all the seats in the stadium are numbered to represent the score tracker. And then out on the stage, there are these other icons and I assume, again, actions that you can take. So I don't know how this plays. I could be wrong. If I play this at some point, I might say, wow, that was the worst game board that I've ever played on, but I don't think so. And especially if Mind Clash, you know, did hear what they've done with their other games, I'm sure that it's very useful, but it's also so beautiful. It seems like it'll be really cool to interact with. I just, you know, I can't wait to be going around to the different shops, picking up what the ingredients I need, the components, and then going on and putting on the stage production in this theater up in the top right of the board. This is beautiful. I can't wait to play it. This made my top games I want to play in 2024 list. I really hope to get this played.
Yeah, this game looks so cool. And the art style is also kind of neat. It really does kind of represent that 19th century, like pamphleteer kind of artwork. It's really neat. Although the coolest thing about it, I think, is actually not the board itself. It's these little meeples, I think, that are supposed to represent magicians with top hats, but actually look like a bottle of Boone's Farm, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's true. They do. That's funny. Yeah, but it works either way. Either way. All right. Well, Adam's pick for number one was a game that also was on my short list because I just, every time I look at this board, it makes me happy. This is Empires of the Void 2. This is a game published by the designer is Ryan Lockett and with his publishing company, Red Raven Games. And Ryan Lockett, I honestly really wanted to include a Ryan Lockett game on the list here. And I was so glad that Adam did because his artwork is so evocative of, you know, kind of building the world that you're interacting in. But most of the games that I played of his, they may use a storybook or some other element. So I couldn't quite use them for a great game board, but Empires of the Void 2 is a great pick. It's this beautiful sci-fi setting where you see a whole bunch of planets laid out. And the whole idea in this game is that you're kind of moving around between planets, completing missions, picking up resources and things like that. But here's what Adam said about it. He said, great artwork, giant planets, and weird space stuff. And the cool thing about this is that these planets are just massive space on the board, but they can be kind of varied every game. So you put a different stack of cards that you're going to interact with when you go to that planet on them. So it's very functional. It's very evocative. And then some of the routes you're taking between the planets, you'll just run into like one of the routes to get between one planet and another. There's this giant space squid out there and you have to like roll to prevent your ship from getting damaged. And then there's like this kind of random little, you know, space station out in between a couple other planets where you can trade if you're en route to, you know, in between those two spaces. So the board game art is so awesome here. And he made it variable in a simple way by just kind of you swap out different little stacks of cards that go on each of these planets, depending on how your setup was set up without having to, while still being able to include this great game board out here. So I think this is a great pick by Adam.
I actually, when you first said that, was thinking, oh, I'd never even heard of this game. And then I looked at it and we actually played it. Yeah. I mean, we played it a long time ago, back when we first started playing games together. Yeah. So it is a very fine looking game too. Great board.
Yeah. And this was, I remember this was a, it was very early on. And this was one of those games where we'd played like several games. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, Chris, let me just teach you this simple little game. So I'm sure you barely remember it, but yeah, beautiful board. And I think worked really well for my memory of playing it.
Yeah. So Tim, did you have any runners up on your list?
Well, I kind of mentioned a few of them as I was going through the list, but to be honest, yes, I had about 20 other games. I'm not going to go through the whole list. I will just say that a couple of my favorite games that I didn't bring up here specifically, Everdell. I love how everything you need is on that board and it's beautiful and cute. Take the tree away, but the rest of that is all great. And I mentioned Anachrony and Scythe got brought up already. So those were some of the, my favorites as far as game boards.
Yeah, I had one that I wanted to mention just because it almost made the list. It just barely made the list that ended up getting kicked off because I had to include Sulcan. It's Windward, designed by Daniel Aronson, Hayden Lapiska, and Nick Tompkins, and published by Play Monster. And I know, Tim, one of your favorite games, which I'm just kidding. I know you hate Windward, but the board itself is actually really cool. It's a pie-shaped board. It makes a circle, so it's like a planet. In this game, you're navigating around the planet. And it's not so much that the game board is so beautiful. I mean, it's pretty standard space planet-looking, you know, hex-based board. But it also has these obstacles on the board, these floating space debris, and you have these flying spaceships that you're whaling ships that you're flying around the planet with. And one of the parts of the board, reminiscent maybe of some of like the like Viscounts, that has the centerpiece that is the castle. Here you have this base, which also has like a little wind vane on it. And as you're playing the game, you can't move against the wind, and the wind is constantly changing. So hence, I guess, the name Windward, and you're, this is supposed to invoke the old, olden days of sailing, but on another planet. But I thought that that was something that was a really cool idea. Strangely, it was an idea that didn't actually work that well in practice as a game mechanism, but boy, it sure did create a cool-looking board.
Great choice, and because the human body forgets pain so that we, you know, probably don't have to live with it, I'm ready to try Windward again if you ever felt like it, Chris. So if you wanted to bring this to one of our cons, I wouldn't say no to it. I remember there are some interesting mechanisms here. Maybe it's worth another try. I don't know. Maybe not, but
yeah. I still own it, and you've never played the physical version.
I have not.
The physical production,
yeah,
is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think it'd be kind of fun to sit around a table and just play through this goofy game and see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, there's one last thing that I wanted to mention here, and that obviously there are a lot of great game boards. There are a lot of bad game boards, but I wanted to call out one game board that I just found was really confounding some of the decisions made on it. And this is one of my favorite games. That game is Underwater Cities. This is another game published by Delicious Games and designed by Vladimir Succi. What's confounding about this, because I actually like, it's a very colorful board. It looks great. It's basically three different types of worker placement actions. But what's always confused me about this is that they decided to lay these actions out on the side of the board and print them in the shape of the playing cards that you use when you take an action. And so it always has led to confusion when I teach somebody the game, because they think, you know, well, am I supposed to play the card on that space? But you're not. You have a little token that marks that you're playing it there. And then because of that layout and some of the other things, the score tracker is inside those slots, and then it has to kind of move around these other components. So the score tracker isn't just a straight rectangle. It's kind of like zigzags around this board in different spaces. So not a bad, it's very usable. It's very easy to play once you understand. I suspect that the original version of it, you would just play your card out on the board, and that's why they look like that. And then probably someone was like, wait, it's confusing. I don't remember how many cards I played. So they started using the markers to indicate that, but they never changed the board layout. That's my guess on it, but I just think it's a really just a couple strange choices that I always have to kind of explain away when I'm teaching this game.
Yeah, I guess I'll throw in one game where I just don't get it, and I thought this is the game that you were going to mention because you said it was one of your favorite games and had some pretty confounding design decisions, at least in terms of the artwork. And I can see you're laughing. I can't tell if you guess what I'm going to say here. It's Beyond the Sun, which is essentially just a board that is a giant tech tree with about as much charm as a spreadsheet. So it's I will admit too, this is not my favorite game. I've kind of gotten over this one. I think I went through a phase where I liked it at first and then didn't like it and then liked it and then didn't like it. So I don't know, maybe I'll like it again. But regardless of my like or dislike for it, I know it's a well-loved game. You guys really enjoy playing it. I've enjoyed playing it. So it's got some really, really cool mechanism design decisions and some neat stuff going on. But my goodness, there is really no graphic element to this game whatsoever. It's basically cards with no art and a board with no art. And I guess there's a little bit of art where there's some planets that are off to the side where you can put your spaceships. But it feels to me like a missed opportunity for a game that that can be fun to play and that is so thematic, having a board that is so non-thematic, which is a shame.
Yeah, this is a great call, Chris. And I couldn't, as I was going through the list, I kept coming back to like, I could never use this in a best board game art. It is interesting. The board's huge. So if you ever play it in person, it is just quite a massive table presence with these cards laid out there. But honestly, I think all they needed to do was do what like Apiary did, where they put a little icon for each of the kind of things you buy, the little technologies you buy or whatever. Just put a little, imagery on each of these cards. And it would have been so much more fun. I mean, some of the things are like advanced genetics and, there's just like bio traffic network or something like that. But if you just had a little bit of graphic to represent the technology we're building up, it'd be so fun. It'd have the story that's telling out across the board. But yeah, they skipped on that. It's good call out here.
Yeah. Think about terraforming Mars.
Adam did not call out. Well, Terraforming Mars is actually another great pick of missed opportunity, just with the style of like graphic design they use there. Somebody's got a little bit outdated graphic design, like they write in HTML in 1987 or something like that. All right. Well, Adam didn't give us a confounding item to add to the list, so I think that will wrap up this topic. Before we close out for the day, I did want to call out a couple really awesome reviews that we had some listeners leave for us. The first was on Apple Podcasts. We really appreciate reviews left on Apple Podcasts. It does help a lot of people find the show. And we got another great one today. This was a 5-star review from John Barbershop Games, and the title was "Doesn't Get Better Than This." This review is overdue as I've been a longtime beneficiary of the podcast. I decided to take a crack at designing a board game over a year ago and subscribe to this podcast and multiple others in an effort to stay connected to the hobby. This is the only board game podcast that I still follow today, and starting my work week by tuning into the newest content each Monday morning has been a real treat. These guys provide honest and insightful opinions, which are sprinkled with the type of banter that can only be shared by true friends. Their excitement for the hobby is infectious, and I truly believe their breakdowns of what they enjoyed or didn't enjoy in a game have made me a better game designer. Tim, Chris, and Adam, thank you for sharing your time, talents, and passion for board gaming with the rest of us. Maybe one day I'll be able to return the favor and provide you with an enriching gaming experience, which would no doubt incorporate lessons learned from each of you. That's so awesome to hear, John. Really appreciate that. And when you get that game ready and published, drop us a note on social media. We love supporting our community. I'll be happy to take a look at it, and I'm excited for you. I hope it turns out great, and I hope we really did add a little value to your design process.
Yeah, an enticing offer. I can't wait to hear great things.
All right. Now, I also got a comment on Blue Sky. This isn't a review, but once in a while, somebody will just say a really awesome thing about us and tag us. And this is actually helpful as well, because if you're talking about us in your feed, that means your friends are seeing it. Other people that might be interested are seeing it. This was from Omar Hernandez over on Blue Sky. And he just posted, "I just wanted to thank Board Game Hot Takes. I've become a listener in the last couple months, but today they've made me decide to remove some other podcasts and channels from my rotation. I really like what they do, and they elevate my level of acceptance for other creators. Thanks." So Omar is basically saying that we set the gold standard for board game podcasts. I'm just blown away by that type of comment. I just appreciate it so much. It makes me, when I read this stuff, this makes my whole week. It doesn't matter how bad my week's going. It makes my whole week. So thank you, Omar. Really appreciate that. I'm glad you're getting some enjoyment out of our show.
We love that you're having a good time.
All right, cool. Well, that will wrap up this week's episode. If you enjoy the show, please rate and review us, as we mentioned, on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And you can find us on Facebook. There's a Board Game Hot Takes Facebook group, but also on Blue Sky. Until next week, take care, everybody.
Good night, all.